Welcome to Life, Lessons, and Laughter with your host, Glenn Ambrose.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. What is happening? How are you? Welcome to the live aspect. Please shoot me a little message to say hello, where you're watching from. And all right, I'm going to open with my new shirt. You guys ready? Here it is. My new shirt. Your heart chakra needs more cowbell. I saw that post a little while ago, and I'm in trouble because I found somebody local that makes t-shirts out of whatever you want. And I used to make my own on Vistaprint and have them shipped to me. And then now I have somebody local that can do it. So I'm in trouble. I may have a lot of t-shirts and sleeveless shirts with all kinds of spiritual stuff on them because now I can get it done. So yes, this could become a problem. Hey, Denise. From Michigan. I just re-listened to the beginning. You know, I'm doing Understanding Unconscious Behavior, and I'm redoing the show because a few weeks ago I was doing this show and I had some technical difficulties. So I just figured I'd just redo it, you know, instead of doing like a part two or something. So that's what I'm doing. So this is what I'm talking about today. And so I re-listened to the beginning so I would have some idea of what I talked about. And right at the beginning, I said, hey, Denise from Michigan. So this is a perfect way to begin the redo. I didn't have a cool shirt, though. But, you know, hey, you can't have everything. So here we go. Understanding unconscious behavior. You know, so one of the things that I mentioned in the last show, which I thought was helpful and I wanted to mention again, is the reason I chose the title Understanding Unconscious Behavior. The reason I chose understanding is because understanding is the birthplace of compassion. You know, if we understand something, then we can have compassion for people. And this is why I want to talk about this. It's, you know, not just, honestly, this is why I talk about everything. It's so we can understand ourselves better, so we can work on ourselves and also understand others better, where they're coming from, so we can actually judge them less. You know, we want to judge people less. Hey, Sarah, Colorado Springs, back in one of your sea states. you know, we want to understand people, and it's not, you know, an excuse for poor behavior, nothing like that. It's just if we understand people, we can interact with it in a better way, because a lot of times when people are behaving unconsciously, it doesn't make sense. So it throws us and we're like, what, why would they do that? Why would they say that? It's like, well, because they're behaving unconsciously. That's why, you know, like it. So don't expect them to be behaving consciously if they're acting unconsciously, you know, that. So if you understand what unconsciousness is and you understand that somebody's behaving unconsciously, well, then usually the best move is to disengage, because it's not going to go anywhere healthy, probably, especially if the you know, tempers are up or whatever. So, you heard Faith shaking. Yeah. She's in the living room over there. So yeah, you know, so we can understand people and disengage when appropriate. And even, you know, if tempers aren't flaring and stuff, you know, sometimes we can give people a pass, or we can just kind of, direct the conversation in a different way without this confusion of why somebody would possibly be like this. You know, that happens a lot nowadays. If somebody doesn't see something the way we see something, it's like, what is wrong with them? There must be something wrong with them. It's like, no, there's multiple perspectives. And quite honestly, a lot of them are unconscious, you know? So, this is why I wanted to do this show, to kind of explain some of this stuff so we can understand one another better as a species, because that's what this is. This is, you know, the human species is largely unconscious. Oh, Faith must have heard you. She came over and laid next to me.
Hi, JP.
So, and another thing I mentioned, this is not an excuse for poor behavior. You know, if somebody is yelling at you or something and you need to get yourself out of the situation and say, hey, listen, you know, don't treat me like that or whatever, that's fine. You know, you can still hold people accountable. It doesn't stop that. It's just understanding. So there's a difference between holding people accountable and blame. Is how I explained it last time. So, you know, I'm just going to touch on the points that I thought were repeat worthy. So holding people accountable is like, hey, listen, you know, I don't respond well to yelling, so I'm just going to get myself out of the situation. It's just, we'll talk about it later. Whatever. That's handling the situation appropriately. You know, it's about you. That's what boundaries should be about. They should be about you, and you living your life should be about you. So you can hold people accountable and say, hey, listen, I'm not going to allow that treatment. I'm not going to allow that treatment. I don't respond well. You know, then it's about me, as opposed to you're a bad person, you shouldn't be doing that. Then it's about them. They can do whatever they want, man. We're all individuals, and we're supposed to be free. So we have the right to basically do whatever the heck we want to do. And if people want to run around mistreating people, they do it now all the time. People get so upset when somebody else mistreats somebody. It's like it happens every day, like billions of times. And we're like, oh my God, you know, like they mistreated somebody. Oh, like it happens all the time. Like just set boundaries so they don't mistreat you. What they do with everybody else is really none of your business for the most part, you know, maybe unless it's your kid or something. but yeah, just, you know, determine your reality and how you interact. So you can hold people accountable, you know, even if they're behaving unconsciously and they're unaware of what they're doing or why they're doing it. But like, yeah, and that's usually what it is. They're usually unaware of why they're doing it. They kind of know that they're doing it because they're doing it, right? So this is where it kind of gets confusing as to what I'm talking about with unconsciousness. Because most people, if you ask them, you know, do you live unconsciously? Well, no. I mean, I know what I'm doing. That's not what unconsciousness is. Unconsciousness is not really knowing your why. You don't really understand why you're doing it. And most of it is because it's socially acceptable. We've been trained to do this stuff. You know, since birth, man, we've been trained and conditioned and domesticated to go in certain ways. And, you know, I still find ways in my own life that I'm behaving a certain way or doing a certain thing. And I'm like, what? Like, why am I doing that? Where did that come from? And I'll look at it and be like, oh my God, it's socially acceptable. So I've just been doing it for 50 years. And I never even stopped and slowed down and said, does this make sense? Do I want to do this? many, many, many socially acceptable things do not make sense when you really look at them. You know, that's, I've said this before. That's why it kind of cracks me up about spirituality. It's like, you know, people are like, ooh, spirituality. It's so woo-woo. It's so out there. You know, it's so ethereal. It's, you can't touch it. It's not tangible. It's just pie in the sky. No, man, spirituality is the most grounded stuff there is. It's based in nature, the laws of the universe, and it actually works consistently. What doesn't work consistently is socially acceptable ways of behaving. Like thinking that, I mean, really, like, this is a good example of social conditioning. So generations, I mean, my generation probably started with the generation before, went on to the generation after, and is still going on to some degree, probably not as in depth as it was in my generation. We're starting to come out of it, but there is an unconscious belief that if you go to school and get good grades in high school and then go to a really good college and get good grades there, then you'll get a good job. You'll probably, you know, and then from there, it gets really unconscious. Most people will actually say they don't agree with this, I bet, but it's how they live their lives if you watch their actions, okay? And then, so you get a good job, and then you get married, you have 2.3 kids, a dog named Faith, a house with a white picket fence, and you're happy. Like, you, two cars in the driveway, and you're good. Like, that's the key to life. Okay, so that's basically the key to life. This is the model that most people design their lives out of. And it's useless. Like, I mean, if you want to be happy, that nothing that I mentioned has anything to do with happiness. None of it. I mean, it's been scientifically proven that, like, basically there is a certain level of happiness that is achieved when your basic needs are met. Like, when you can eat food and you have a roof over your head and you have clothes, just your basic needs. Once those are met, there's a jump in your happiness level. After that, it's very, 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 very minimal as to how much more happiness you get based on the amount of money that you make. And a lot of times, people with enormous amounts of money are very unhappy. You know, so it doesn't have anything to do with money, but yet, if we look at how much energy we put towards making money, it's, you know, during our daily lives, it's, I mean, what, maybe, I mean, compared to other things, I'm guessing 75% of our energy goes towards making money. You know, that's the biggest thing that we put focused effort on in our daily lives for 50, 60 years. So a large amount of our energy is going towards that. Now, how much energy do we put towards being happy? 5%? I mean, you know, do we go out to a movie every once in a while? We think that's going to make us happy. And that's what I mean. Like, we don't even make conscious choices as to what happiness is going to be. We don't even know how to achieve happiness. We don't know where it is, how to get it, what it looks like, what it feels like. We don't really understand happiness, let alone how to get it. And if you ask most people, they're not really happy. And if you ask them what they're doing to be happy, they'd go, what? What was the question? Well, if you're not happy, what are you doing to become happy? Well, what do you mean? What am I doing to become? I don't know. Everybody wants to be happy, but most people don't know what it is, where it comes from, how to get it, you know, like. So we're not putting any energy towards it. And then we wonder why we don't have it. right? That is unconscious living. We're conditioned to live a model of life that does not bring happiness, does not bring contentment or peace. We don't experience it. And then we don't even change it. We believe society's model so much that we don't change it after it doesn't work year after year after year after year after year after generation. We still don't change it. That's how deep social conditioning is. So I'm going to rip out a few other like social conditioning ones. Hopefully I won't stop on each one. But you guys know how I talk. Letting people walk on you means you're a good person. Most people wave that flag, that martyr flag. Well, I do everything for others and then they don't do for me. I'm just such a good person. And people are running around enabling, you know. We don't know the difference between helping people, supporting people, and enabling people. We literally don't know the difference. You know, I noticed, here I go talking about it. Like, I noticed this, I started noticing it like 15 years ago or so in Rhode Island. And I noticed that, I don't know how this caught on, but road rules went right out the window because there's this urge, the spiritual awakening that's happening, that's bubbling up within everybody. We have a stronger desire to be a good person now. Okay, so that's bubbling up within people. So they want to be good people. We all want to be good people. Like this is a really big part of the spiritual awakening. We can feel that urge, that yearning to be a good person. It's coming into our consciousness more. So we really want to do it, but we don't know how to be good people. So what people started doing on the roads, not here in the DR, in case you're curious, but in the United States, and I saw it in Rhode Island and Florida, people began stopping in the middle of the road to allow somebody on a side street to come out in front of them. Okay. Now, this seems harmless enough until you take into consideration all the other people on the road. People are driving down. Nobody ever did that. In my entire life, nobody did that. Nobody was like what you do is if you're driving down the road and you see somebody on a side street, like what I used to do is either I just kept driving or maybe if I wanted to be a nice person, I hit the gas. So I got past them a little bit earlier, maybe even left a little bit of space behind me and they could pull out quicker. Okay. You know, no harm, no foul, but the people are locking up their brakes and stopping for no apparent reason, causing rear-end smashes, pile-ups behind them because nobody is expecting them because they're just driving down a straight road and they just lock up their brakes to be nice. This is an example that people don't understand what it is to be nice. And they're behaving unconsciously. They see somebody sitting on the side of the road and they go, you know what? I'm in a good mood. I'm going to be a good person. I'm going to let this person pull out. What happened? Or like sometimes like in Rhode Island and Florida, there's two lanes going each direction. So the person in one lane stops traffic behind them. The right lane, cars are still driving by. So this person that's being allowed to pull out pulls out right across both lanes and gets slammed by an oncoming car that can't see him. Like that, it's a serious problem. Like I've seen accidents. I've almost gotten into several because of this. And what it is people go, I want to be nice. And they're completely unaware of how it's going to affect anybody else because they're not used to it. So they're choosing bad ways to be nice. This is the same reason enabling is such a big deal, is because people think like, well, you know, well, if I don't give them money, they won't eat. It's like they're going to buy drugs, man. You know it. I know it. Like, you know, like you can't enable them. you can't enable a drug addict or an alcoholic or just a manipulative child. You cannot enable them to continue poor behavior. Otherwise, they never learn. We need to hold people accountable. Okay? So being nice does not mean enabling people. Find out what the difference is. Being nice does not mean being a doormat. Letting people walk on you, that does not make you a good person. It makes you a doormat. Stress is caused by external factors like jobs. That's a socially acceptable. I mean, you see commercials about it. Like, you know, people like, oh man, I'm so stressed out at my job. And people like, yeah, man, I hear you. Me too. Oh man, it's really tough, man. Life isn't easy. You know? Yeah. So stressed out. That's not how stress works. It's not how stress works. And everybody, like, they'll give you pills because your job is stressful, so you don't feel the stress. That's not how stress works. Stress doesn't happen from external circumstances upon you. That's not the dynamic of stress. Stress happens because you are incapable of processing the scenario that's happening in a healthy way. I mean, think about it. What's one of the most stressful jobs? Like, I've said this before. To me, the one that pops into my head seems like emergency room doctor. That seems like something that people, if somebody said, hey, I'm really stressed out, and they go, why? You go, I'm an emergency room doctor. Most people will go, oh, okay, I get it. Why? Because it's fast. It's very fast paced a lot of times, right? The risk reward level is high. So, like, if you don't do your job right, somebody could die. That's a pretty big deal. So, like, that is, to me, if you're looking at stressors as socially acceptable term, those would be pretty high on the list. So you look at that and you go, oh, yeah. Well, there are emergency room doctors that love their job. They thrive in a fast-paced environment. They love saving lives. They haven't taken it on personally in an unhealthy way to think that they actually are more powerful than God and they have control over who lives and who dies. They just have to do their job to the best of their ability, and they do, and they know that that's all they can do. So they're very healthy, so they don't get any stress for performance anxiety. They don't have that. Because they have a healthy outlook on their job, and they thrive in a fast-paced environment. So that doesn't stress them out. They love it, man. They're going. Faster the better. Some people are like that. So if you're stressed out because of your job, either you're at the wrong job and you shouldn't be doing it because it doesn't match your personality, or you need to adjust your perspectives, the way you're looking at your job and how you're processing the pressures that are being put on you. But that's internal work. Like, you know, what is the world here to figure out your life? Well, they shouldn't be putting pressure on me. Well, who? Like this billion-dollar company that you work for? They're supposed to go in and check to see if you're okay? And everybody else that works for them? That works for them? They're going to make sure that you're not stressed. Hey, we're not putting too much pressure on you, are we? If you're waiting for that conversation, man, don't hold your breath. Your life is your responsibility. So stress doesn't work like that, but it's socially acceptable. Changes are made by the government. Government works for you. I don't want my kid to grow up. I have to go to work. No, you don't. Everybody says that. Oh, I have to go to work. No, you don't. Nobody has to go to work. Nobody has to. Nobody's got a gun to your head. You're choosing to go to work. Why? Well, I wouldn't be able to eat. Oh, right. That's a good choice. You chose eating. Good choice. You're probably going to live longer if you keep making choices like that. Yeah, good move. But nonetheless, it's a choice. You can choose not to eat. You can choose not to have a roof over your head. There's a whole bunch of homeless people out there. And some of them, it ain't their fault. And some of them, it's their choice. They choose to be homeless. Some of them, you could be one. Just choose not to go to work. It's your choice. You don't have to. Well, I have to if I want to eat. Well, yeah, that's a choice. It's you don't have to. You could steal food. You'd probably get caught and end up in jail, I would imagine. But, I mean, you could choose that. Is that a, to me, that's a worse choice than going to work. But it's a choice, and some people make it. You know? Yeah, I'm not going to go on. I'm just going to try to touch on the, I don't want my kids to grow up because I see it so much. I'm not going to go into it too much, though. But it's just, oh, I don't want my kid to grow up. They're so cute. Oh. And everybody says that all the time. And it's what it does is, you know, it's, I understand that up here consciously, this is why I want to touch on it, because it kind of shows the difference between consciousness and unconsciousness to some degree. Okay. So I don't want my kid to grow up. Oh, he's so cute. She's so lovely. She's little and just, oh, I can cuddle with her and it's so wonderful. Well, of course you're not going to stick your kid in the microwave and try to keep them small or something, you know, like, because that would be a conscious action. So you're not going to do that. Do you really want them to stay the same size? No, not really. Not on a conscious level. No, of course you want them to grow up. You know, if I asked people, they'd be like, no, of course I want them to grow up and have their own life. Okay, then why don't you say that? Because it doesn't make you look loving in social standards. That's why. It makes you unconsciously, it makes you look like a good, loving person to other people. And they support you when you say cute little stuff like that. Oh, I love my little one. Oh, I hope they never grow up. I've even seen people start doing it with their pets. Oh my God, it's caught on to society so much lately that people are like, oh my God, I got this little dog. I hope he stays his size forever. Then buy a little dog. Like, you, you know, but what it is, see, the danger of it is that people keep, they say it over and over. And they think it, oh, I want them to stay small. Oh, I want them to stay small. Oh, and it starts affecting their behavior because unconsciously you're feeding that. So on an unconscious level, a level that you're not aware of, you actually are starting to believe it on a deep level. And what it does is it starts shading the way you handle situations. So if you keep telling yourself that year after year after year, it functions the same as guilt. A lot of people parent from guilt. Like, you know, I was an alcoholic for 20 years. So when I got sober and woke up, I already had a kid, you know, that was 2.5 about. So now I move up to Rhode Island to be a father. And the first thing that somebody told me that really saved my ass was you cannot parent from guilt. You can't do it because it shifts the energy. It's the energy underneath. It's your belief system underneath. I'm guilty. I'm bad. I was a drunk. I wasn't there, you know, for 2 years of his life almost, and only for visits. And I was an alcoholic. So therefore I'm a bad person. And I, you know, maybe my absence hurt this kid and all these guilty feelings. And then when he asked for a freaking third popsicle, you go, well, all right, because your decisions are based on this guilt that you have down inside. And kids are manipulative. That's what they do. It's like they're trying to figure out how to live in this world. There's nothing more manipulative than an alcoholic or a drug addict than a kid. A kid is the only thing more manipulative. So because, well, dogs are close. No, kids are worse. But it's because they're trying to figure out this world. It's so confusing and all this social conditioning doesn't make sense. So they're trying to figure out how to play the game and get what they want from their perspective, which is, you know, it's not a bad thing. I'm not, they're just manipulative by nature because they're trying to figure out their way. So the more kids can manipulate you, the more trouble you're in. And quite honestly, the more trouble they're in. Because they're going to get out into life and not be able to manipulate people. And it's going to be a problem, you know, most of them. So like it's very manipulative. And we can't, if our energy underneath is skewed with guilt or, oh, I want them to grow up. I don't want them to grow up. I don't want them to grow up. I don't want them to grow up. I hope you never grow up, honey. I love you. You're so small and sweet, and I hope you stay with me, and I want to feel needed and wanted and all the time, you know? And then it comes time for them to go off to college, and you're a wreck in the living room. They're stressed out because they're going, oh, my God, like, she's been telling me for the last 15 years that she doesn't want me to grow up. Now I'm abandoning her. She's freaking out in the living room. Like, they're going to get guilt. Or you actually get what they want, or you get what you want, and they stay little. They never mature mentally. They never reach out for responsibilities, and they're in your house at 30 years old playing video games. And you're going, why don't you get off your ass and do something with your life? And you're like, well, the kids are like, why, man? You've been telling me to stay little since I was little. I did. Now, you know, you want to feel needed, go make me some freaking pizza rolls. So this is how this, I'm telling you, the unconscious belief systems start manifesting themselves into our lives. And I'll give you an example of how it happened to me. So like when I grew up in my neighborhood, having in the playgrounds I went to and stuff, having money was not a good thing. I mean, like, and we got a pool put in the backyard, an in-ground pool, when I was like in third or fourth grade or something. So I became the rich kid. So when I went out to play with other kids, you know, maybe not so much my closest friends, but a lot of other kids in the neighborhood, like, hey, there's the rich kid. And a lot of times a fight would ensue because they meant it as an insult. And I took it as an insult, you know, and I found this out doing some spiritual finance work, going back to find out what my core beliefs were about money, my unconscious beliefs about money. And I thought back to that and I thought like, yeah, the way people talked around me is rich people were greedy. They thought they were better than everybody. They, you know, stepped on people to get where they got to. That was just the general consensus of the blue collar town that I grew up in. And that became my outlook on money. Now, my father taught me how to manage money very well. And he was very good with money. And like, so I understood on a conscious level how to manage money very well. And I could stretch it really well and all this stuff. You know, I moved out when I was 18, paying all my own bills. And I think I used to save like $10 a week, I think. So I'd have $40 at the end of every month and I could go buy something. Like one month I bought a vacuum cleaner and then one month I bought a fan. You know, it was stuff like this. So I knew how to manage money on a surface level, but I had this unconscious belief system that money was bad. I was completely unaware of it. I mean, if anybody said, do you want money? Oh my God, yes, I want money. If you ask most people, hey, you know, do you want $100,000? Do you wish you just had a bunch of money all the time? Everybody's going to say, yes, yes. Yeah, that's on a surfacey conscious level. On an unconscious level, most people think money is bad. People with money are bad. So this is why they don't have it. So like when I was in my mid-20s, I'd say, I got $30,000 from a job that I had as when I was welding and stuff. It was a stock ownership thing. So I got this 30 grand. Now in my 20s, I've been broke my whole life. 30 grand, it's a lot of money. Sweet. I kick in consciously. What do I do? Well, it's retirement fund, so I should roll it into another retirement. This is what I found out with my research that I was doing consciously. So I don't get hit with the taxes. Okay, cool. So I figure out how to do it. I roll it. I decide, hey, you know, I did come into a big chunk of money, so I'm going to take 5,000 of it and just live it up, man. I'm going to do stuff I always wanted to do. So I went scuba diving, got scuba diving certified. I got, I went skydiving and I bought myself like a 32-inch Sony Trinitron TV, which back then was sweet, man. I think weighed about like 600 pounds. It was insane. but I got all that stuff and I rolled the rest of it, you know, like, okay, responsible. I didn't know this at the time, but it was eating at my consciousness because having money wasn't in alignment with my moral values. I thought, you know, of course, everybody wants to be a good person, right? Nobody wants to be greedy. Nobody wants to be selfish. Nobody wants to be a snob. Nobody wants to be a jerk. And I had equated all those with money. So I had this money and it was chipping away at my unconscious. My unconscious is going, you got to get rid of that. You got to get rid of that. You got to get rid of that. And I, you know, I didn't hear those thoughts, but eventually, you know, maybe 6 months, a year later or something, when I got frustrated at work, which I was drinking back then, I got frustrated at everything at one time or another, but I didn't quit. This time I quit. Why? Because I had money in the bank. I could live off that for a while. Why should I be treated like this? I deserve better, right? This is what I told myself. So I could start living off that money. So I did. And then all of a sudden the consciousness kicks in, goes, Glenn, you're pissing through that money and you're going to owe taxes on it too. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to do the right thing. And so I got to go back to work. So I start looking around. I end up going back to the same job. I'm working again. And I think I quit again. I found ways to sabotage myself until all that money was gone. And I owed like 5-6 grand on top of it in taxes. And I did it over, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, probably two. So, but this is how our unconscious belief systems override our conscious thinking. They are deeper. They are stronger. They are more powerful. And they will override your conscious thinking and literally backdoor you and sabotage you. I had no idea. I found out that I had actually done this to myself. I had probably at least 10 years later, maybe 15 years later, after I had done this, that's when I finally got clarity on it. I had no idea that I had done that. And I did it one other time when I sold my house. I mean, I was pretty drunk then, so that might have been, I was just living off of it, man. I wasn't even pretending to be responsible, so that might have been a little different, but I got a chunk of money twice in my life, and I blew it because it was eating at my unconsciousness. So This is how it works, which leads me to the dynamics of unconsciousness. Like basically unconscious belief systems are conditioned behavioral responses. Okay. So what happens when we grow up, basically, and what was that? Oh, it might've been the Four Agreements that talked about a version of this, the domestication of when we're a child growing up. But anyway, my version of it is basically we have, as we grow up, we have our experiences meshed with our personality. Okay. And every time something happens to us, that goes into our computer, our data bank. So, which is basically our brain. So what happens is, like if somebody steals your crayon and your personality says, whatever, I have a whole box of crayons, they can have that one. Then it goes, okay, stealing crayon, no big deal, filed. Okay. And then somebody else takes it personally and goes, you stole my crayon. I can't believe you stole my crayon. Give it back. All right. And it turns into this big thing. And then you have somebody stealing things, big deal, filed in the memory bank. Okay. And we have billions of these things that happen throughout our lives. on my comments, I just saw this three messages. Best adult dating site, sex find. Obviously, disregard that. And I highly recommend not going to that site. It's probably pretty shady, seeing how they're sabotaging a spiritual website. But it is about unconscious behavior. So, anywho, so like what happens is billions of these things start just packing on top of us, on top of each other. Okay. And what it does is it creates conditioned responses to situations. So one of the ways that I explain this is most people throughout their life, they've conditioned themselves that when they're driving, if they see something, think it's mastery of self. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Deanna. So it might not have been the four agreements, it might be mastery of self. They're both by Don Miguel Ruiz. So thank you for that. So most people, when they're driving, they have, like, if something happens that looks dangerous or scary in front of you, or could be dangerous, most people hit the brakes. Okay. That's a conditioned response. They were taught it at some point, usually, you know, and they just started doing it, and they did it over and over. And then now when something happens, they hit the brakes and they don't think about it. They don't usually even assess whether it's the right thing to do. They just do that as a unconscious reaction. I, on the other hand, had a bad experience with that. Like, usually I was driving too fast, so I couldn't stop anyway. I mean, honestly, when I was a kid, I drove like a maniac. So like I was usually driving too fast where I couldn't stop anyway. And then a couple times I tried stopping and I either skidded or it got worse. It just didn't go well. So I started hitting the gas while I was still learning to drive. And I found that I could get past things better than trying to stop for them. By the time, if I hit the gas, I was gone, man. Like, if, you know, I would just assess, like, can I make it? I think so. Boom, I would hit the gas. So a lot of times my unconscious reaction is usually, if it's unconscious, it's usually to hit the gas. It's not usually to hit the brake. The reason I use that as an example is because it's the opposite of most people. So you can see the contrast, how it's just conditioned. Okay. There's not a lot of thinking involved. It's just, you know, and I go, fly, you know, and it works well for me. But anyway, this is how unconscious conditioning is. We just do things and we don't think about it. And just because we're awake, we think we're aware of why we're doing what we're doing. And we're really not. You can tell by the speed of the reaction. When somebody goes, you're a jerk. No, I'm not. That's an unconscious response. That is not a conscious response because you can't think that quick. They didn't even finish saying it. And you had a conditioned response that came out. Certain people have conditioned responses to defend themselves in certain situations. Why? Because they experienced them in the past over and 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 over. And it's meshed with their personality. So some people, when attacked, they defend. Other people, when they're attacked, they run away. They get out of a situation. They deflect. Other people freeze. Right? So it's just freeze, flee, or fight. the three conditioned responses, right? So we just go into one of those unconsciously. And even when we're talking to ourselves, we do it. So you guys have probably heard me do this before. Like when I'm talking to myself, the first thing I have to do is get past the unconscious level. So to get to the deep truth. So like if, and the way I do it, like I'll, you know, I'm trying to make something up. Let's say I'm trying to find out if something bothers me and I go, so, you know, I'll put my attention on my body and I'll go, Glenn, does that bother you? And usually the first response is very high pitched and very quick. So Glenn, does that bother you? No. Man, that's BS. That's an unconscious response. There was no thought to it. It would, and that high pitch actually, like that kind of shows a bit of a defensive or deflective technique with the high pitch of the voice. So I know that that's not my truth. I mean, my truth might be the same as that. It might be different. I don't know yet. I haven't gotten to it. All I know is that ain't it. That's a conditioned response. So Glenn, and I try to slow myself down. Glenn, does this bother you? No. Okay, well, the tone wasn't as high. And there was half a second before the response, so it slowed down a little bit, but that's still too quick. Glenn, does this, and a lot of times I'll add a really every time I ask, just to differentiate it and slow everything down. Does this upset you? Does this really upset you? Or really, does this upset you? Really, really, does this upset you? No, not really. Glenn, does this really, really, really upset you? And then I usually hear nothing. This space, stillness. My unconscious isn't automatically kicking in to give me the answer it thinks that I want to hear. And there's no rush for the answer to come out. That's so it just pauses and goes, yeah. Now all of a sudden the tone is lower. It's calm. And I can actually usually feel it. Whereas the first ones, I don't really feel it, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Let's move forward. Let's keep moving fast. So we are masters of distraction in our society. You know, we don't go deep like this. We don't really find out the answers very often. So it's like, it's, you know, we stay on the surface and move really fast. That way we don't feel all the pain that's down inside if we get still, you know? So this is, it's conditioned responses. And we have them for everything. How to be a father. How to be a friend. How to be a good worker. How to be a good leader. Everything has conditioned data from your past, from your social conditioning, from the 20 years, 30 years, 60 years that you've been on the planet. It has data all piled up. And when the right stimuli activates, it hits that, the conditioned response kicks out. It's automatically. We don't think. This is why the sacred pause is one of the best things that we can do in spirituality. You know, I did a podcast on that years ago. Maybe I'll do another one. It's been so long. But go back and check that out. It's pausing because we can actually pause a lot of times for a half a second sometimes once we get good at it. Sometimes 2 seconds, whatever, in a conversation. And that's enough to disconnect the unconscious response and have us actually choose something. It creates that space. And that's, you know, like I said, I mean, I'm telling you, a lot of time, what happens up here happens much faster than what happens in reality. So like, once you get good at it, you can pause and people won't even know that you're pausing. And if they do, honestly, when I was getting used to it, I used to get a lot of compliments when I paused, and people could still tell. A lot of times I pause now, people can't tell. But back then it was more aware because I needed to pause for like 2 seconds instead of half a second, right? You pause for half a second, people don't know. Half a second feels like 3 seconds in your brain. You know, you're thinking, you you stopped, you thought, you came to a decision, and you're wondering if they noticed yet that you stopped and thought, all in a half a second. You know? So you can do it like that. But in the beginning, you know, it might take a few seconds. Who knows? It might take 5 or 10 seconds, whatever. But I used to pause and know what I noticed is people looking, of course, at first it's out of the ordinary. So they look at you like, are you going to respond? You know, but then since they put their focus on you, they actually start reading your energy without even knowing that they're reading your energy. And what they pick up on is that you're actually giving them a thoughtful answer. So then, you know, 3 seconds later, you give them a thoughtful answer and they look at you. People used to look at me all the time and go, wow, you really thought about that, didn't you, before you answered? And I'm like, yeah. And people used to love that because they're like, you know, and they used to tell me, they're like, I appreciate that. You know how many people that you just ask them something, they just say something, and, you know, and just life, that's how life goes. And then when they experience something different, they're like, wow, I like that. I like the fact that you actually thought about it for a second and gave me an honest response. I appreciate that. You know, it's kind of cool. So that's a way that you can bring consciousness in. I think I'm just going to look over some notes. I think what I'm going to do is kind of lean into understanding others so we can really touch on the understanding and compassion aspect of this. But I'm just going to look to see if there's anything else. Well, actually, I'm just going to lean into that because half the time when I look at my notes, it draws me out of the flow. So I'm going to go. So, compassion, understanding of unconsciousness. We have to understand that we all do this. You know, that's one of the best ways of connecting with other people and feeling a part of, and not separation is ego. The ego always wants us to be separate, wants us to be right and them to be wrong. I just want to be happy. And the only way to be happy is to be part of a community, connected with other people, feeling like you're part of. So like, you know, that's a healthy thing. So we have to stop judging everybody all the time. And one of the best ways to know that is to know that we all do this. I catch myself doing it, and I've been working on myself for 19 years, and this is my job. Like, and I still do it. So like, we all do it. Don't get defensive and shut your brain off and stop focusing on other people. The reason for this podcast is for you to focus on yourself and see where you do it primarily. And then you can do the work on yourself primarily. Secondarily, it's to be able to understand how other people are functioning and going, okay, most people don't think about what they do. They just give a knee-jerk reaction based on a stimuli that's triggering a particular part of the brain. It's just a reaction. Stimuli triggers this, reaction comes out. And they've been doing it for so many years that they're accustomed to it. So they think that that's the right choice for that situation when they've never even thought about it. They just get conditioned, you know? So when it happens, they don't second guess themselves. They've done the same thing 200,000 times before. So why would they second guess it now? Well, maybe because the situation is different slightly than some of those other ones. Maybe because it's a different person. Maybe, like, who knows? This is one of the reasons why, like, dominant people need to be taught how to treat people. Everybody needs to be taught how to treat people. But, like, we have to teach other people how to treat us. And everybody thinks that it's impossible. And the, especially with the dominant people, like, oh no, I can't, you know, they treat everybody like crap. That's because everybody allows it. And they think they can get away with it. They don't treat me like crap. I don't care how dominant they are. They're not going to treat me like crap. I'll walk away. I'll go get another job. And yes, I have had it in job situations and I still don't allow it. It's not allowed. Like, no. When I became an adult, it was not allowed to treat me like, nobody was allowed to treat me like crap. It's just, no, it's just not allowed. I think that has something to do with some past lives, which is a topic for another show. But like, it's just, we can teach people how to treat us, because even if that dominant person treats most people like crap, there's one person at least in their life that they don't treat like crap. And the reason they don't is because that person doesn't allow it. And I might just be that person. But there's a lot of dominant people that come at me and try to be dominant, and it's just shut down immediately. No, we're not. That dynamic isn't happening, dude. It's just not. You know. And then what happens is, since I'm the one person that stands up to them and just doesn't allow it, just be like, no, I don't interact like this. And I don't usually have to say it out loud. Usually I can do it energetically. But if somebody's that unconscious that I have to say it out loud, I will. But it's just not happening. I'm going to, if we're in a store, I will go work with another salesperson. I will leave the store, go find somebody else. I will bring my car to a different mechanic. I don't give a crap what the scenario is. That's just not allowed. So whatever I need to do, I'm going to go do it elsewhere, but I ain't doing it with you. This is not going to continue, because it's just not on the respectful level. And that's where it needs to be. Like, we need to respect each other. And if we can, cool. If not, then this isn't going to last long. So like, I've had many situations where people came at me hard and I just stood there energetically and stood my ground and then all of a sudden it kicked in, and like, they probably don't even know they're doing it, but they'll look at me and they're like, okay, all right. And sometimes they do, they'll look at me and they'll literally do that. They'll like, yeah, all right, okay, I see you, I know who you are. It's like, yeah, I'm the MF that you respect. That's who I am. You know. And then what's cool though is I usually have really good relationships with those people. Why? Because I'm one of the few people on the planet that they actually respect. That's why. And you can't have a healthy relationship with anybody in any way, work, romantic, family, friendship. You cannot have any healthy relationship with somebody if there's no respect. You can't. So like, I have lots of healthy relationships out there, because, and sometimes people don't like me. That's cool. You cannot like me. You cannot like what I say. You cannot like what I do. You cannot like all kinds of things about me. You can disagree with it and think I'm full of crap. That's cool. I have no problem with that, but you will respect me. You will not treat me disrespectfully, because you won't be in my life. It's not that I'm not going to go fight people. I'm freaking 54 years old, you know, but I'm not going to be interacting with them in a disrespectful way. And if my life has to get a little bit difficult because of that, it's okay. I would rather have my life be a little bit difficult for a little while than have somebody disrespecting me. That's just my priority list, you know? So you can do this too, but I don't blame them. It's like, I don't care. See, this is what I mean by holding people accountable. If somebody tries disrespecting me, it's an unconscious pattern. I understand that it's an unconscious pattern. I understand that that 99% of the time, somebody that's disrespecting me is not intentionally saying, hey, I'm going to go crap on Glenn today. They probably didn't even know me before. So it's not personal. They're not trying to attack me personally. It's just their unconscious pattern is being dominant, and they're going to try to dominate me. And I'm going to hold them accountable, and I'm not going to let that happen. But I'm not judging them and saying, oh, they're a jerk because they're dominant. No, it's just, that's how they've gotten through life. They've gone through life. They've found that if they act dominant to most people will cave and they'll get what they want. So it works for them. So they do it. I understand it. I'm not going to judge them for it. It's just a different personality. We all choose one. The people who play a victim get energy that way. It's all about getting energy off people. You know, people that play victims, they wave this martyr flag like they never do anything wrong a lot of times. And all they're doing is playing the victim so people feel sorry for them and give them energy. It's no different than the perpetrator or the dominant. You know, everybody points the finger at the dominant person saying, you shouldn't try to dominate people. It's like, well, what about the victim and the martyr that sits there and goes, oh, poor me, I don't have any control over how people treat me. Everybody treats me bad and craps on me all the time. Oh, will you feel bad for me? Oh, yes, you're such a good person. People shouldn't crap on you. Oh, and they're just giving you their energy. So you're just stealing their energy in a different way. The dominator takes it. You trick them into giving it to you. Do you see? It's all and it's all unconscious. Nobody even knows that they're doing it. This is how deeply it's embedded in our society. So don't judge, just be aware that this is what's happening. Work on it. The more you work on it in your own life, in your own way, the better you're going to get at one, maintaining a healthy balance in your own life and interacting in life in conscious ways by pausing and making a choice. So the, you know, your life is going to enhance dramatically just by that. And then it's also, you're going to be able to see it clearer in other people. The more you work on you, the more you're going to become familiar and accustomed to what it looks like, what it sounds like, what it feels like, excuse me, when somebody's behaving unconsciously. So since you are, you can recognize it in other people. Okay. So when you recognize it in other people, you can just, instead of that, you know, judgment, jerk, they don't know what they're talking about. Why did they say what? Like, oh, it was just an unconscious reaction. It was a conditioned response. There was no pause. They didn't think about it. They just, over their life, these types of things happen, and this is types of behavior came out. They just did it, whatever, you know. And if you have to hold them accountable so they don't treat you poorly, fine, you can still do that. But you just don't blame them. You understand that they weren't consciously doing it to you. They weren't sitting there going, you know, really think about it. We act like people crap on us all the time, right? And really the alternative to what I'm saying it's unconscious behavior, right? Let's look at the alternative for clarity's sake, for contrast's sake, okay? The alternative is let's take a driving situation, right? So you're driving down the road and somebody swerves over into your lane and almost hits you. Now, most people's unconditioned response is that person is a jerk. Why? It was fear induced. You know, you experienced fear because you thought, you know, you're going to get into an accident, or the car was going to be damaged, or you might get hurt or whatever. It was a fear response. And we're conditioned to blame people for fear responses. So we go, jerk. That guy's a jerk. He was trying to kill me. Like, okay. So one option is it was unconscious. He wasn't aware of what he was doing. Like, and this one might be a kind of a different level of unconsciousness. Like maybe he was trying to change the radio station, or maybe he was thinking about the stress job he has and his jerk boss, or maybe just gonna fight with his wife, or maybe his kids in the hospital, who freaking knows? But it wasn't a conscious act. He wasn't swerving to try to see how close he could come to getting into an accident because he was bored on a Tuesday. Or he wasn't sitting there at breakfast going, where's Glenn driving today? Yeah, Glenn Ambrose. I've been listening to that gentleman's podcast, And he said something that offended me. And I believe he lives in this state and works over here. And I'm going to follow him to work and I'm going to scare the crap out of him. That probably didn't happen. Or let's get one step a little bit more believable, which this isn't believable either, but you know, forget that Glenn Ambrose, but he was sitting at breakfast going on the way into work. I'm going to really scare the crap out of somebody and come as close to getting into an accident as I possibly can, because, you know, it is Tuesday. And what I haven't done lately is get into an accident, have all the police show up, have me be the one that was the cause of it. So then I have to pay for my car repairs and their car repairs, and or my insurance will, and my insurance will go up. Oh, yes, yes. You know, I was going to take the day off and go to the beach, but that sounds much better. I'm going to do that on my way into work. You know, this is the type of thinking that would imply conscious action and that you should take it personally. I mean, even that you shouldn't take it personally, because if somebody actually did think like that, it has nothing to do with you. That's a screw loose up here in them. Okay. So even that's not personal, but at least it leans in. So what do you think is more feasible? That somebody tried to do something that was going to make their life much more difficult for no apparent reason, or it was a mistake? Probably it was a mistake. See, this is what happens when we bring in conscious thinking. This is why I say spirituality is not woo-woo. Social conditioning is woo-woo. Social conditioning says that guy's a jerk. And if you walk into work, okay, and this is how I can prove it. If you walk into work and you go, man, somebody almost slammed into my car today on the way into work, and everybody goes, oh my God, really? And you go, yeah, but you know, let's be honest about this. Let's be realistic. Well, he was probably just trying to change the radio station, or his mind probably wandered. Hey, that's happened to me before. That's probably what happened to him. Most people are going to be confused by you saying that at minimum. And they're probably going to be like, I'd be pissed. That's the socially conditioned response. That's the appropriate response socially. And if you say anything other than that, people are probably going to think that's weird. Minimally, they might ask you why you think like that. They might tell you you should be pissed, like I just mentioned. And minimum, that conversation is probably going to die off in the next 30 seconds. It's not going to go on and on. It'll just be like, oh, yeah, okay, well, I guess maybe he was thinking of something else. Yeah, I guess I have done that. Oh, okay, there's nothing really to talk about. So everybody will go their separate ways. The little conversation at the water cooler became very short, right? But if you walk in and you go, this jerk, man, cut me off and almost got an accident, you're going to get all kinds of support. That conversation could go on all day. I remember when that happened to me. That's such a load of crap, man. People are crazy nowadays. People will feed that, man, because it's socially acceptable and they can bond over it. Why? Because it's socially acceptable. Do you see this? And it's very, 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 very unlikely that that person is actually a jerk. It's very unlikely that it was premeditated. It's more likely that it wasn't premeditated. It was a mistake, and that we've all done it before. That's reality. Nobody thinks like that. That's socially unacceptable. What's socially acceptable is outrage. Which socially acceptable is unrealistic. There's probably a 0.01% chance that that was premeditated and that you should be getting angry at that person. And yet it's socially acceptable. There's probably a 99.99% chance that that was a mistake and you shouldn't take it personally. And that is socially unacceptable. Do you see? This is this is why we have to stop breaking away from this unconsciousness, because it's literally not true most of the time. Our conditioned responses that are socially acceptable are not healthy. They're not good, and they're not based in fact. You cannot find happiness by getting good grades in high school. I'm not saying it's a hindrance to happiness to get good grades in high school. There are benefits to getting good grades in high school. There's benefits to getting a college education. But it does not equal happiness. And that's what most people want in life. And unconsciously, they assume it's at the end of that road. And it ain't. So we have to start looking at stuff like this. And, you know, instead of just, well, you know, my boss treats me like a jerk. That's socially acceptable. Oh, I hate my boss too. Yeah, we can bond over that. We're victims. Yeah. Ooh. Or you could take responsibility for your life, teach people how to treat you, or go find another job, or both. Like, especially nowadays, man, the job market is, everybody's looking for good people. That excuse doesn't fly anymore. And I've had it with people. Like, people have come to me, you know, with job situations that were really difficult. And sometimes it's just an adjustment of attitude that needs to take place. And most people will disagree with that, because unconsciously you're a victim. I get it. Unconsciously, nothing is your fault. Nothing is, you know, unconsciously you're a victim of your boss and the workplace and everything else. Unconsciously, we're victims of everything. Nothing is our fault. But if we start slowing down and going, okay, wait a minute, you know, what's the alternative? And I've had people literally look. And like within 1 week, they're going, oh my God, I can't believe all the opportunities that are out there. Or within 2 weeks, I should say. They start looking and they're like, oh my God, like signing bonuses, all kinds of stuff, man. People are looking for workers. I know it's not that easy for everyone, but, you know, just because something's hard doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. so that was kind of what I wanted to touch on. You know, just, you know, understand ourselves, understand this is rampant in the world, so we can stop judging each other so much and just start understanding. And a lot of times just putting some space. If somebody's acting unconsciously, especially in a blah, 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 you know, attacking way, like understand that they're unconscious. Don't sit there and try to get reasonable with them, because they're not reasonable. They're unconscious. They're all caught up in a behavior pattern of attacking. You know, you can't have a rational conversation. That's what always kills me. Like when people have arguments, right? They get very offended of what people say in an argument. Do you believe they said this to you? And I'm kind of like, well, were you arguing? Yes, but they still shouldn't have said it. Well, yeah, that when you're arguing, you're completely overcome with anger, usually, you know, and I'm talking about intense arguments. People are angry. They're trying to make their point. They're not listening real well. The anger literally shuts down their brain, so they can't think clearly. I mean, scientifically, I'm serious. Like, so you can't think clearly when you're angry, because your body is trying to push you into fight or flight. So you're not making good decisions. You're caught up in unconscious behavior patterns and the defense mechanism. And people are hurting. That's why they're angry. So they're trying to hurt you so they can feel less hurt. So yeah, they'll say and do just about anything. The worst of people's behavior comes out like that. Now, again, do I say this is acceptable and they shouldn't be held accountable? No, I think that they should be held accountable. Like, you know, you should try to change the dynamic of how you two communicate, you know, in the future, so this doesn't continue happening. But you don't take somebody at their worst and then think that that's their truth. You know, like when they're all angry and pissed off at you and they go, I hate you. Oh, they must really hate me. You know, the last 10 years, they've told me that they love me, but that one time when they were really angry, they were unconscious, their brain was locked onto a negative vibration and they couldn't really think clearly. That's the one time the truth actually came out of them. The last 10 years of I Love You, that was a load of crap. You know, all those moments we spent together, they really hate me. And it finally came out. Like, seriously? Seriously? You've never said anything stupid when you were upset? Or you've never, you know, and people, and don't get me wrong, like some people can say stuff like that and actually think they mean it. I've said, like, you know, my go-to is attack. If you know, like, I mean, I of course I try not to get triggered. It doesn't happen that much anymore. But if I feel attacked, I'll attack 10 times harder. So if I go and I'm on, yeah, man, stuff comes out of my mouth that at the time I think that I mean, because I don't say stuff I don't mean, but I'm unconscious. So at the time I think I mean it. And then afterwards, if I calm down and think about what I said, I'm like, oh man, that wasn't, no, man, you went overboard there to try to make a point because you were trying to be right. That was your focus at that point. So the more, this is why people, when they're unconscious and when they're arguing and when their ego is in charge, they exaggerate everything. You always do this. Nobody always does anything, you know. This always happens. No, that's just somebody trying to make a point. So they exaggerate. You know, that's when you can tell they're unconscious. That's when you can tell the ego is in charge. That's when you can tell that making a point is more important than the truth. So don't engage in an argument with them. You can't argue with somebody that's conscious. So as soon as when there's somebody that's unconscious and they're arguing and you engage, you just became unconscious. As soon as you engage arguing with somebody that's unconscious, you're unconscious. Why? Because it doesn't make any sense. You can't argue with somebody that's unconscious rationally. You can't have a rational conversation and come to a rational conclusion with somebody that is unconscious. It's literally impossible. So if you engage with somebody in an argument when they're unconscious, welcome to being in their world because you just became unconscious. So just find a different way, you know, get out of it. Yes, less judgment, more cowbell. Your heart chakra needs more cowbell. Thank you, Will Ferrell, on Saturday Night Live. So that's going to do it tonight, peeps. I hope that helped. I hope you got some clarity on, you know, the unconscious behavior and where it comes from and how to understand it a little bit better in yourself. Focus on that. Then you'll be able to navigate it better in other people. And yeah, that's going to do it for tonight. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I did see some of your comments. Thank you for that. I was just kind of rolling. So I just kept going, but I did see them. Thank you. Let's see. Yeah, that's going to do it. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk with you soon.
Looking for more? Check out over 200 episodes of Life Lessons and Laughter, or click the link in the description of this episode to connect with Glenn directly.